Chapter 3.
Reload! I want incendiaries to cover our flanks. Heat disrupts the Xenos targeting scanners. Set this whole blasted ridge on fire if you have to.
Semaka roared into his comm unit. Around him, the air was filled with the thrum of the powerful engines of the Hunter's Stroke. Other than the crew, he and Jebe were the only passengers aboard the Razorback. His augmented hearing could pick up every grind of the treads and every squeal of the armored plates flexing. Even the company's tech marines didn't have old Shatterhand's ear for ailing pistons and fraying filters. He grinned to himself, but was careful not to let it show on his face. The children thought he didn't know about their name for him. He flexed his hand, feeling the pull of old wounds beneath the white ceramite. He had almost lost it once, pulling a screaming, puling wet thing out of the corrupted chassis of one of the nightmare engines of the great enemy. He had torn the chassis open and plunged his hand through the acidic bile that had filled it, even as the engine had tried to scissor him in half with its battle claw. It had been a necessity at the time. Now it was a story to be passed around the fire. Such was the way of it. Jebe grunted in disgust, and Semaka dropped his hand.
"We shouldn't be disrupting them. We should be attacking them," he said. "I thought we were fighting, old man."
The champion crouched awkwardly in his seat, his sword across his knees. Why he didn't just sheathe the damn thing, Semaka didn't know. Nor did he bother to ask. The only thing more worthless than Jebe's opinion was... well, there wasn't really anything more worthless than that.
"We are fighting them, or did you not notice the gunfire?"
Semaka spat. He paused to glare at the champion. Semaka had seen 100 warriors take up the company's honor for their own, and of that 100, Jebe was easily the most annoying. He was the youngest to hold that position since Corsaro himself, and his trophy pole was overbalanced with skulls and scalps. He saw a mulish glint flare in the champion's eyes.
"That's not what I meant," Jebe said. "We left the Khan. We should not have done that."
"No, we shouldn't have," Semaka said.
"But he is Khan, and we have our task. Let us try and accomplish it with what grace we may."
He looked hard at the champion.
"Withdraw and then return. That is our way. Strike, ride, and strike again."
He turned and hammered on the reinforced turret, where the Razorback's gunner was busy firing at the Tau that had pursued them. They'd managed to pull roughly half of the Tau force in their wake. Everything that could keep up with them had come after them. That lessened the pressure on the Khan, but it was going to make contacting Garchai almost impossible.
"Keep the Kama from getting too close to your Sugai's teeth, monkey, or I'll have your topknot," he said, referring to the whirlwind.
They needed the battle tank in one piece and functional. He turned and made his way to the driver's compartment.
"What's waiting for us?"
he said, leaning through the hatch.
"Our sensors and communications are still jammed," the driver said. "We're charging blind."
He paused and then added,
"Not that that's anything new." "So long as we keep charging,"
Semaka grunted, dropping a hand on the Space Marine's helmet and giving it a shake.
"Don't stop, Tolui. Our Khan's life depends on our speed." "Speed I can give you. Just don't ask me to get us there in one piece," Tolui said.
Semaka could hear the grin in his voice, even though his features were hidden beneath his helmet. He nodded, pleased. It was good that Tolui was cheerful. War was a craft, and a craftsman must take pleasure in his work. Else why do it? As Semaka slipped back into the passenger compartment, the comm bead in his ear crackled.
"Report,"
he said.
"We've... Ost... Kont... Is... Talva,"
a voice spat. The urgency of the words carried through the hiss of static, if not the words themselves. Semaka cursed. The vehicles had limited contact, thanks to the Tau jamming signal. There could be any number of reasons they'd lost contact. If the Rhino had drifted too far behind the others, even by just a few meters, the signal could have succumbed to the interference.
Get the damn hatch open,
he shouted back at the crew compartment.
Which one?
Tolui called back.
Which one, he says. The one I'm staring at, you horse's knuckle,
Semeca snarled. He snatched up his bolter and stomped towards the Razorback's rear hatch. Jebe was on his feet and a half pace behind. Semeca thrust a finger at him without stopping.
You stay.
But, Jebe began.
My Razorback, my rules,
Semeca snapped.
Is everyone going to argue with me today?
He didn't bother waiting for a reply. Instead, he hurried to the rear hatch. He checked the bolter's clip as he moved. The pneumatics that controlled the hatch hissed as it opened wide, letting in the cold and snow. Semeca grabbed a dangling equipment strap and stepped to the edge, his eyes narrowed against the glare of the moonlight on the snow. They had reached the narrowest point of Rime Crag, where the rocky ground thinned to a barely passable lip, just above a snow-encrusted slope. The slope itself was an undulating ribbon of rock that stretched down into one of the many basin valleys that now dotted the poisonous surface of the Hive World. The basins were in actuality immense, kilometers-across impact craters, souvenirs of an Inquisition-sanctioned exterminatus at some point in Agrellan's history. Semeca inhaled the poisonous air, snorted, and spat a gobbet of acidic spittle. The planet was a death trap. The Tau would have ignored it, and rightly, if it hadn't occupied the sector of space it did. It was a key world. To take the Damocles Gulf, the Xenos had to take Agrellan. Yasugai's teeth was just behind them, its missile pods swiveling as it sought out targets. Bikes roared past, jinking in and out of the line. Behind the whirlwind, one of the rhinos trundled along, a white scar in the cupola, his hands on the grips of the storm bolter. Overhead, the roar of the Razorback's heavy bolters had faded, leaving behind only the grinding grumble of the treads rolling over rock and snow. The Tau vehicles, which had been harrying them, had fallen back. Semeca grunted. He hadn't expected that. He craned his neck, trying to spot the second rhino. Had they fallen behind, or... Dark thoughts flickered across the surface of his mind, stirring from cynical recesses of a mind hardened in the ways of war. The explosion, when it came, was not a surprise so much as an unwelcome confirmation of his suspicions. He saw a flaming chunk of wreckage slide down the slope far behind them. He knew instantly that the warriors aboard Tulwa were as good as dead, whether they had been in the rhino or not. He cursed. The Tau had been prepared for a breakout.
No wonder they didn't put up much in the way of resistance, he thought.
He considered ordering the bikes to check for survivors, and then dismissed the thought. They had their task, and he'd be damned if he'd let a few filthy Kamar prevent them from accomplishing it. He tapped the bead in his ear.
Hasik,
he growled. Static hissed in his ear as he tried to make contact with the leader of the bikes. He cursed and pushed on the off chance Hasik was receiving him.
Hasik, keep going. Whatever happens to us, make contact with Garchai. That is your only duty.
He began to order the whirlwind to collapse the ridge shelf behind them, in order to stall whatever the Tau had unleashed, when flickering shapes landed onto the battle tank from above. The stealth suits crawled over the top of the tank, and they fired at him. Semeca bellowed in fury as projectiles ricocheted throughout the Razorback's interior. He let loose a burst from his bolter and slammed a fist repeatedly against the top of the hatch.
Monkey! You blind bovid brain!
He began. He faltered as a white-armored body tumbled down onto the lowered lip of the hatch and splashed blood across his feet. Monke, he realized, as the Kroot swung down into the Razorback. There were five of the alien mercenaries. They were covered in patchy white fur over their rubbery hide, and their skull spines rattled as they came for him with raucous shrieks. The Kroot wore heavy harnesses, repelling gear, he thought, and carried thick, serrated blades. They had likely been lurking on the crags above, and pounced as soon as the Razorback passed beneath.
Jimmy!
He roared, smashing the first of them aside with his bolter. The Kroot spun away and out of the open hatch, but the others paid it no heed. They slammed into him, knocking him off his feet. Ugly, veined air sacs decorated their wattle throats and pulsed wetly as the creature's breath rasped in their lungs. The Xenos cannibals had the ability to adapt to their surroundings, he knew. These had obviously figured out a way to survive in Agrellan's virus bomb-ravaged environment. Their blades scored his armor as he wrestled with them. He was heavier and stronger, but they had the advantage of numbers and a raw ferocity that would have put an orc to shame. He'd lost his bolter in the fall, and he clawed for the combat knife, sheathed on his hip, as he grabbed a snapping beak that had darted for his face. Three of the Kroot scrambled off him and started towards the front of the Razorback. Semeca had no time to shout another warning. His attacker's blade slid between his shoulder plate and gorget, tearing through the carapace to dig into the tough flesh beneath. He left off trying to grab his knife, and instead grabbed the Kroot's avian skull in both hands and jerked it towards him. Their skulls connected with an audible thump, and the Kroot reared back in surprise and pain. Semeca grappled with it, and they rolled down the lowered hatch, bumping over Monke's limp body. He drove a fist into its side and was rewarded by the snap of bones. The Kroot shrilled and slashed at him. He caught its wrist and drove his palm up into an oddly jointed elbow, shattering the joint. Then, with a jerk, he drove the creature's own blade into its throat. He booted the body off the ramp, and it was swiftly ground under the whirlwind's treads. He grunted in satisfaction and looked up. The stealth suits were too busy to notice him. They were preoccupied firing at the rhino's gunner, who was trying to draw a bead on the creatures with his storm bolter without damaging the whirlwind. He turned to reclaim his bolter, and he nearly slammed face to beak with a Kroot. Startled, he nearly toppled from the ramp, but regained his balance. The Kroot tumbled past him, trailing blood.
"Is that all of them?" Jebe asked.
The champion was covered in blood, none of it his. Semeca wondered how he'd managed to employ his sword in the close confines of the Razorback. He gestured back towards the whirlwind.
"Stowaways,"
he rasped, grabbing hold of Monke and dragging him up the ramp and back into the Razorback. Jebe reached out a hand and helped him.
"Talwa is gone. Orchai is going to need some help. Grab my... What in the nine hells are you doing?"
"Helping," Jebe said, stalking out onto the ramp, sword in hand. Without a backwards glance, he gathered himself and leapt, clearing the distance between the Razorback's ramp and the whirlwind's front hull. He slammed into the latter and scrambled up. As he reached the top, his blade seemed to spin in his hands, and a stealth suit exploded and tumbled away in a cloud of smoke and snow, cloven from hip to shoulder. The remaining two turned, and Jebe charged towards them, his blade licked out, peeling an armor plate from one, and the force of the blow sent the Tau spinning from the whirlwind. The Tau tried to activate its jetpack, but too late, as it struck a rocky outcropping and vanished. The remaining Xenos fired, and Jebe leapt from the top of the whirlwind. He caught hold of the side hatch and dangled for a moment, trying to right himself. The remaining Serguma crouched on the edge of the roof and took aim. But before it could fire, the storm bolter on the rhino roared, and the Tau vanished in a burst of blood, smoke, and mangled armor. Jebe laughed as it fell past him and vanished down the slope. Before Semeca could do more than shake his head in disbelief, the face of the ridge behind the rhino bulged outward suddenly. Semeca's eyes widened as the massive battlesuit tore its way out of the concealed alcove that had been carved into the curve of the ridge and ploughed through the snow behind the rhino. It was bigger than any other battlesuit he'd had the bad fortune to encounter, at least twice the height of the others and roughly the same size as the Imperial Knights. He watched as the massive construct hurled the camouflage tarpaulin that had hidden its alcove aside and raced for the rhino, snow billowing in its wake. It was fast, too fast for its size.
"To your rear!"
he roared.
"Look to your rear!"
The space marine in the rhino's cupola tensed and began to turn, but too late. The battlesuit was on the transport a moment later, grabbing its rear. The engine stuttered as the rhino's treads lost their grip on the ground. Simaka could only gape as the rhino was upended and sent crashing down on top of the whirlwind. The latter's missile pod exploded in gouts of flame, as missiles exploded or fired automatically, and the force of it flung Simaka backwards into the Razorback. Flames filled the loading bay, obscuring the fate of the battle tank and Jebe both. He coughed and groped his way to his feet, half blind and mostly deaf. He staggered towards the crew compartment.
Tully, have you made contact with the Khwarezmian yet?
He croaked. He peered out through the view slit. He could see the shapes of the bikes, or what he hoped were the bikes, hurtling far ahead. Hasek had got his message, or he was seizing the initiative. Either way, the message would get through.
No,
the driver said tersely.
Monke?
He asked.
Dead. Simaka said. We're the last, besides Hasek and his riders. Keep us moving. Don't stop. Whatever you do, don't stop.
He trailed off as the ridge face in front of them bulged and a second battlesuit burst into view, blocking their path. He leaned forward.
Ram it!
Tului complied, but Simaka knew that it was too little, too late. The battlesuit leveled its weapon and fired.
Here they come,
Corsaro said. He stood amidst the improvised strongpoints in full view of the gap. Moonfang was planted in the ground before him, his palms resting on the pommel. Godi and the other designated heavy bolter gunner had retreated behind cover as soon as they'd re-entered the bastion at his command. He was master of the hunt, and the honor of drawing their prey in fell to him. Corsaro watched the white armored forms of the fire warriors creep forward in silence. They moved with inhuman precision, more like a flock of birds or a herd of horses than men. Snow crunched beneath their feet as they came, and he could smell the odd, briny tang of their blood on the air. The mines the barrage of Castellans had laid had done their work. The only path of assault that remained to the Tau was through the breach in the wall. The assault had begun as the snow had slackened. He recalled from the briefings he'd only half listened to that inclement weather played havoc with the Tau sensors and camouflage technology. They'd fired at the walls and the rocky escarpment that rose over it, dropping snow and rock on the bastion. All of it was intended to drive the white scars back from the walls, to force them to seek cover in smaller and smaller holes. It was a simple enough plan and cunning, for all that it ignored that speed was not simply a matter of space. Behind the fire warriors, the hammerhead had ceased its barrage. He could hear the whine of the approaching battlesuits and smell the searing stink of the energies used by the Tau weapons. The fire warriors would seek to push them back and keep them pinned in one spot, easy meat for the battlesuits. On top of the walls, hazy shapes flickered and moved, their presence revealed by the drifting snow. Red dots suddenly appeared on his chest, bobbing across the Aquila before veering off to seek out other prey.
Amberguy,
he sub-vocalized.
I see them, my Khan,
the Stormseer said. The stealth suits were there only to keep them boxed in, Corsaro thought. He could have been wrong, but he doubted it. They likely had orders not to engage, unless absolutely necessary.
Can you call this storm?
He asked. The Tau had reached the gap in the wall. His lips peeled back from his teeth in a fierce smile.
Come on. Just a few steps farther, he thought.
The spirits of this world are dull-witted and the winds stubborn, but I think I can convince the snows to fall,
Amberguy said. Corsaro could hear the strain in the Stormseer's voice, even through the fuzz of the static that afflicted the Vox channel thanks to the Tau jamming frequencies. He was asking much of Amberguy, but they needed any advantage they could get. When the assault failed, the Tau would likely move straight to trying to tear the bastion apart around them. When that happened, they might have to move. Khwarezmian or no. And the snow would be as good a distraction as they could hope for.
Take your time, Corsaro said. They owe us for Bok and Jochi. I would have them pay their debts soonest and at once.
The fire warriors had cleared the breach. If they noticed the way the rubble had been cleared and situated, they gave no sign. Perhaps they saw it but did not understand. Perhaps they understood but came on regardless. Corsaro thought it was the latter and bowed his head. Brave prey was the best prey. Then he clasped Moonfang by its hilt and jerked the softly humming blade from the ground in a spray of snow and stone. He glided forward, palm flat on Moonfang's pommel, the tip of the blade angled down. The Tao had stopped, unprepared for an assault by a single warrior. Corsaro gave a bark of laughter. As if in slow motion, the pulse rifles swung towards him, and he heard the rough sibilance of the Tao language crackle through the air. His laugh grew, spearing out ahead of him like the shadow of a swooping eagle. Alien fingers twitched on triggers, but slow, too slow. Moonfang's pommel rolled beneath his palm and the blade arced up. His grip loosened and the blade scythed out. A fire warrior lost its head and blood sprayed across the front of its comrades' helmets. Corsaro was among them a moment later. Moonfang spun in his grip and the machine spirit within the power sword pulsed fiercely as it tasted Xenos blood. He lopped off limbs and heads, shattered weapons and cracked armor.
Waste no movement, Corsaro thought.
His elbow caught a fire warrior in the chest, crushing the delicate bones beneath the armor as he pulled Moonfang across a throat. He whirled and chopped through the barrel of a pulse rifle.
Do not bother with flourish or flare. Concentrate on the principle. Complete the canvas in as many strokes as it takes, no more, no less, he thought,
leaning back as a short-barreled pulse carbine cracked. He felt the heat of the shot as it passed by him, and the world sped up as he hunched forward, pivoted and drove Moonfang through the shooter's chest, hard enough to lift the Tao off its feet and nail it to the wall. He jerked the blade free and stepped back, arms spread, Xenos blood dripping from his armor and sword. He gazed at the fire warrior teams that had stopped just before the wall. Their advance had faltered in the face of his attack on the first team through the breach. Arms still spread, he stepped back, as if inviting them into his tent. The snow had begun to fall more heavily, and the wind stirred what had already fallen, rousing it into undulating flurries. Corsaro smiled and lowered his arms. Ambergai had done as promised. He planted Moonfang into the ground in front of him. He made a beckoning gesture and said,
"Well, who's next?"
Thirsk shook his head as he watched Corsaro trot back behind cover, his path peppered with a fusillade from the advancing fire warriors. The Khan had his sword resting on his shoulder and paid no attention to the shots that sizzled through the air about him. A white scar handed him a bolter, and he nodded agreeably, sheathing his blade.
"He's mad," Thirsk said as he returned fire.
"No, he is an artist," Ambergai said.
The Stormseer sat on the ground beside Thirsk, his hands on his staff and his head bowed. His voice was tight with strain, and his eyes glowed with an eerie blue light.
"A sculptor who shapes violence the way the men of Kuo Chin shaped clay to make the fluted T-ball so prized by that folk."
As he spoke, the snow flurries grew more savage, and the wind whipped through the courtyard with a shriek. Thirsk did not reply. He utilized the bolter with the precision that had been drilled into him during the stand at the cathedral of the Emperor Ossified. One shot, one kill. Any more was waste, and in a situation like this, waste was as much an enemy as the one in front of you. The fire warriors moved swiftly, but they had nowhere to go. The white scars had created a killing ground and convinced the Tao to walk obligingly into it. Nonetheless, the Xenos seemed determined to make a fight of it. Orcs would have simply charged and died in waves, but the Tau warriors were smarter than that. The Fire Warrior teams leapfrogged past one another, first one team moving and then the next, each one covering the other as best they could. More drones buzzed over them, absorbing some of the punishment meant for the Fire Warriors in a splash of crackling energy. Shield drones, Thirsk realized. Pulse bursts scarred the improvised barricade he crouched behind, but he ignored the dust and flinders of stone which spattered across his helmet. One of the white scars was singing. Others took the song up, and the sound of it seemed to affect the Tau as badly as the bolter shells that tore the life from their fellows. The Fire Warriors began to fall back, some attempting to drag their wounded with them. Thirsk saw something out of the corner of his eye and slid around. Burst cannon roared, and the white scar nearest him staggered. Thirsk lunged to his feet, grabbed the wounded Space Marine, and flung him to the ground behind him. Through the eddying snow, he saw the shape of a stealth suit, crouched on the strongpoint, cannon whirring, with smoke rising from the barrel. Two more suits raced across the tops of the strongpoints, seeking to cover the Fire Warrior's retreat. They attacked and hopped away, seeking to divert rather than kill. He swung his bolter up towards the one closest to him, and a gun drone smashed into him, knocking the weapon from his hand. Thirsk's other hand snapped out, snagging the drone. He yanked it in front of him as the burst cannon spat. The storm of projectiles chewed the drone to pieces and drew sparks from his armor, staggering him. He saw the other stealth suits closing in. He'd made himself a target. He hurled the smoking, spitting drone at the closest and leapt for his axe, where he'd left it leaning against the strongpoint. He snatched it up as the burst cannon chewed the ground around him. The wounded White Scar fired at the stealth suit, drawing its attention. Thirsk launched himself at it while it was distracted, and his axe sheared through the barrel of its weapon. It slashed at him with the ruined gun, and he ducked. As it made to leap out of range, he lunged and hooked it with his axe, hauling it forward. The Tau inside squalled as he wrapped his arm around the suit's shoulders and drove it headfirst into the wall of the command center as hard as he could. Metal buckled, and the alien voice was stilled. He shoved the dead weight aside and rose, axe ready. The dead alien's comrades had retreated, their jetpacks carrying them back to the wall and then over it. They had accomplished their task, however. The Fire Warriors had retreated back through the breach. Thirsk hauled the wounded White Scar to his feet and helped him walk to the command center. The warrior grunted his thanks. Thirsk set him down and rejoined the others outside.
"They've tried the blade. Now they'll use the hammer," Corsaro said, his voice carrying clearly through the vox channel. "Dig in, and ready yourselves for the storm. They'll send in their assault troops as soon as the dust has cleared."
The Khan saw Thirsk and gestured to him.
"The Phobian is in command."
He strode towards Thirsk and knocked a knuckle against his aquila.
"We've got some time. They'll need to regroup, and Amberguy's snows will keep them at bay for a little while. I'm going to see if old Shatterhand has done as he promised. Hold the line, brother."
"My Khan," Thirsk said.
Corsaro nodded and entered the command center. Thirsk looked around at the watching White Scars and took a steadying breath.
"Well, you heard him. Dig in. It's still a long way yet until morning."
Corsaro moved through the darkened base. The combead in his ear sparked and spluttered, and he winced and tapped at it. The local frequencies were still being jammed. He needed to be in amongst his warriors for the vox to work. He'd left a space marine named Chalk in the command center in an attempt to boost the signal using a spare vox unit. The White Scars had learned over the centuries of incessant warfare that specialization was the enemy of effective battlefield operations, or so it was, at least, for their sort of operations. Every White Scar had to be an army in and of himself, capable of fixing his own bike or seeing to his own hurts on the move. The Star Hunts would not be slowed. As such, the warriors under his command had picked up their fair share of skills. Chalk knew almost as much about long-range communication as one of the Ordu's own vox specialists. He hadn't been happy at being left out of the fight, but sacrifices had to be made for the successful prosecution of a hunt. Corsaro smiled at the thought, but it faded as his nose caught the sharp tang of blood. His hand flew to the hilt of his sword as he stepped into the central chamber of the command center. Chalk was dead. His armor ripped and torn, the black carapace visible, and the contact nodes exposed and bloody, as if he'd been caught in an explosion. His hand only bare centimeters from his bolter. The Vox unit was smashed. The hologram spun around and around, showing Rhyme Crag from every angle. He saw markers indicating what he thought were Semeca and the others moving along the ridge. More markers, ones he didn't recognize, closed in, boxing the convoy in. The markers flared and faded.
Traps within traps, he muttered.
It was an artful strategy, taken at a remove. He'd been baited in, and his fangs, claws, and scales plucked from him piecemeal, shearing him of his weapons. And it was only part of a greater whole, he knew. That was what made it all so galling. He'd come to Agrellon convinced he was the hunter. Instead, he'd become the hunted. And Shadow Sun was on his trail, chivying him along to a point of her choosing. He looked around, senses strained to their utmost. He looked at the hologram again and saw two markers that were similar. Something about them, about the color and the crude slashes that designated them, prodded his memory. One marker was on the ridge and involved in the affray around the convoy. The other was inside the bastion. His thoughts crystallized. The base hadn't been defended because it was a trap. That much was obvious. But there were obvious traps and more subtle ones. The Tau had expected them to hold or to run and had planned for either contingency. They knew that it would be difficult to pry the white scars out once they'd dug in and difficult to slow down once they'd begun to move. But why bother? When your goal is the death of one rather than many. Metal creaked. Whatever had killed Chalk hadn't been a Tau. Too quiet, too vicious. He caught a whiff of an acrid avian odor and grunted. Shadow Sun wanted to bring him to heel, so she'd dispatched the best hunting dogs at her disposal to set their teeth in his legs. While the Tau harried, distracted and disorientated, the true hunters struck out at their prey.
I hear you, he said softly. I smell you.
He drew his blade slowly. They were all around him, though he hadn't noticed them when he'd entered. They'd masked their odor somehow, or else had been hiding elsewhere in the bastion. He frowned. He should have ordered a search of the bastion after all. The first of the Kroot came at him from the side. He caught sight of leathery muscles and rattling spines as it sprang for him from out of nowhere, seemingly appearing out of thin air. The Kroot squalled as it chopped down at him. He intercepted the blow with Moonfang, and the alien's crude weapon shattered. Before the creature could react, Corsaro brought the tip of the blade across its throat as he drew his bolt pistol. As the first Kroot fell, he was already firing at the second, which slithered across the wall at him with reptilian speed. The second alien tumbled down, its skull burst by his first shot. But there were more. Blades scissored down, carving gouges in his armor as he whirled. The rubbery hides of the Kroot swam with the colors of the command center as they bled into view, coming at him from all directions, quills rattling. They carried only blades, likely hoping to avoid the attention of the bastion's defenders. They crouched on the hologram dais, clung to the walls and stalked across the floor, croaking and clicking to one another in their debased beast tongue. Corsaro smiled and stepped back, arms spread.
Come then, beasts. Come to the huntsman.
The Kroot swarmed forward. Corsaro backhanded one with his pistol, and fangs broke and flew as the beast's avian head snapped backwards. He blocked a knife that dug for his gut and chopped through an exposed neck with Moonfang. Alien blood splashed across the consoles as he pivoted, slashed and spun. His attackers did not retreat, leaping on him with harsh cries. They seemed eager to claim the gift of death, and Corsaro could not bring himself to deny them. As he fought, he marveled at the complexity of the snare that he had found himself in. Shadow Sun had laid traps within traps within traps, paring his forces down, peeling away his weapons and defences, like a hunter isolating a lone bovid from its herd. But there was something he was still missing. So he fought, and in the fighting, found understanding. The answer, when it crystallized, made him laugh out loud. He brought Moonfang down on the skull of the last of the Kroot, killing the alien warrior instantly. Then, without a spare glance for the bloody wreckage he left behind him, he strode out of the command center. Shadow Sun was here. For all her cunning, for all her skill, she was still a huntress. And no hunter, however skilled or canny, could resist being in at the kill. Corsaro smiled. The night was not yet done, and he had an oath to fulfill.
I hear you, huntress. I hear the sound of your horn. And Corsaro Khan is coming.